Welcome to Heavens Declare. I'm Jim Burr. We're continuing on in this actually be a third part series talking about astronomy from a biblical perspective. We have in this series over 300 pictures, most of them from the Hubble Space Telescope. And just Hubble doing fantastic images of the heavens. And but I thought I'd share a little experience. I travel a lot lecturing. My wife and I travel a lot. We do camp meetings in many, many countries and around the U.S. and often get a chance to witness on the airplane. And I go back to New Jersey, New York every year in the spring of the year, and had a really interesting experience. I was getting on the shuttle bus. I dropped my car off with budget car rentals and got on the shuttle bus, and I was the only one on the bus. It was in the evening, and the driver said, "Are you a musician?" I must have been carrying a case or something. "Oh, no, I build telescopes." He says, "You build telescopes." He says, "I want to know about aliens." And I said, "Well, you know, I think aliens, UFOs is actually what he was saying, UFOs and aliens. I said, I think UFOs probably could be some experimental government activity, and I think some of it may be demonic activity. And I think, you know, the Bible tells us that there will be false Christs and false prophets in the last days. We should not be deceived. And I think Satan may be preparing the world for a deception of false Christ coming." And I think, you know, this could be secret government activity, maybe alien. "That's what I want to hear." He says, "You a scientist and you believe in God?" I says, "Yeah." You know, and he says, "Well, man, I got questions." And so he started asking questions. And in fact, he drove us to LaGuardia Airport in New York. And I said, "You know, I'm not no hurry to leave. I'm turning my car in tonight. I'm leaving in the morning. I got a hotel. And so he drove around the drop-off area in LaGuardia so that he could ask more questions. I had one video left on creation evolution. I shared that with him, gave him my email, said, "You know, email me. I've got more stuff I'd like to share with you." And so that was cool, but he never emailed me. Well, guess what? A year later in April, I'm going back. I get on the bus, turn in my car again at budget, and I'm the only one on the bus, and here is the same man driving. And he said, "This didn't just happen." So once again, we got into conversation. I mean, in New York City, how many people in New York City? I'm the only guy on the bus. Well, guess what? The third year I go back, I get on the bus. This time I'm getting on, I arrive around 11 in the morning. I get on the bus, and I have one person in the back. I'm getting on the side, and the man driving up front, I said, do you know who Elliot is? He goes, "I'm Elliot." He said, "This didn't just happen, you know." And I said, "The Lord's got plans for you. I'm preaching in West, out in Long Island tomorrow." I said, "I'll pick you up and take you out there." Well, he did actually had to work, so we didn't get to do that. But it was exciting sharing in many stories on airplanes and sharing things with people that just really make life fun. But one of these flights from New York, I get into Denver 2 in the morning on a red eye. So I get in my car, turn on the radio station KOA, and I always, well, have all these call-in stations on my speed dial. So I turn on the radio in KOA, and just in time to hear the announcer say, "Professor, you say you have written a book that you can prove there's no God through physics." And the professor said, "Well, that's a little strong. I would say I can show through physics that there's no God." And I thought, man, I've got to get on the radio. So I speed dial, get right in KOA on the phone, and I get right in. And I say to the professor, I say, "You know, you say that you can show there's no God through physics. I think that that I can show you trust the Bible through physics." And professor, I'm on the freeway. And so I want to paraphrase some statements from different magazines that I've read. And in fact, in July of 2001, Sky and Telescope magazine issues had a report on the fact that now the universe seems to be expanding. You would think that the universe, gravity, would pull it back together and we'd have a big crunch. And for many years, they thought that's how the universe would end. They have a, you know, the Big Bang and then the big crunch. It comes back together. But now, as they look at these type A supernovas, it seems to be steady after steady after steady, that not only is the universe continuing to expand, it is expanding faster every day. And there's an article, and as I mentioned, in Sky and Telescope magazine in July of 2001. This article said, if this is true, you know, this violates all standard physics. How can you show there's no God through physics if this discovery violates all physics? And I said, another report was written, and this was in Astronomy magazine, and this is a report about Laura and Postman, two well-known astrophysicists. And they've been watching the universe, and all of a sudden, they seem to have discovered a river of galaxies. The article said they've discovered what looks like a river of galaxies going off in another direction. And the article said, if this is true, we know less than nothing. And I said, Professor, you know, that most scientists say when life arose on Earth, it was a reducing atmosphere. There was no oxygen. And they used methane, ammonia, and hydrogen to simulate this early atmosphere of what, how life could have gotten started, Miller and Urey, and we talked about that in previous programs. And so most scientists would agree that life arose on Earth, we couldn't have oxygen. Oxygen would have oxidized everything. So I said, but Professor, when you read the books, they will tell you that in these supernova eruptions, these exploding stars, are created all the elements for life, including oxygen. So Professor, they say oxygen was made in these supernovas, which created the, helped create the sun, and yet when life arose on Earth, there was no oxygen. And then when you get the first living cell, what do you need? Copious amounts of oxygen. And the professor said, well, you just ought to stop reading those magazines. So about this time, the radio station says, we got the 3 o'clock, it's 3 in the morning. You know, I've been around the sun already 78 times. I should be in bed sleeping, but man, I was pumped. 3 in the morning, the announcer said, we have the 3 o'clock news break coming up. Can I stay over and interview this guy after the news break? Which I did. I was happy to do. In fact, I live in the mountains. I had pulled over and found a place where I could talk on the phone. In Colorado, you can talk on the telephone when you're driving. You don't have to. Some country places, you can't do that. So we had the news break. And I had 6 of these things I wanted to share with him and see what his response was. And in fact, if you, I mean, this, with all these problems, how can you say you can show through physics there's no God? Another one was an article in Sky and Telescope magazine that said, and the question headlines was, how can astrophysicists keep a straight face? This magazine, a whole article on this, because they say all these, there's so much disagreement in the Big Bang, so much disagreement, they present to the public, they come across to the public as though the Big Bang is a fact, it's a done deal, it's good science, it's testable science. And yet they argue, in this article it said they argue over 5 major areas of the Big Bang. How can they keep a straight face? And one other thing, there was a noted astrophysicist, his name was Norwitz, and he said, well, practically the same thing, but he says, we have 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, and we have 100 billion galaxies. Yes, they believe, you know, as I've said, maybe in the galaxy, Milky Way, maybe 100 billion suns, maybe 200 billion, depending on which book you read. We really can't get a good count. But he was saying, and we believe there's as many galaxies as there are stars in our galaxy. So maybe 100 billion, 200 billion galaxies out there. We're going to be showing you a picture of the Hubble took in the sky through the through a straw, a very little tiny portion of the sky in the north, looking out of our galaxy. When we're looking to the north, we're looking out of the galaxy. When we look to the south, we're looking to the center of the galaxy, and we can't really see because of the maze of stars in the center. We can't really see, you know, what's behind that area. But looking to the north, we're looking out of the galaxy. And the Bible even has that right, because your Bible says God hangs the north over the empty space. And so the Hubble looked through there. The initial photograph back in 95, it was a time exposure. For 10 days, they let the light come through that little speck of the sky, and they got 3,000 galaxies. Then they improved the Hubble, new cameras, new computers on the Hubble. Instead of going for a 10-day exposure where they got 3,000 galaxies, they then exposed for 8.4 hours, and they got 6,000 galaxies in 8.4 hours. And then another photo you will see, we'll be showing you coming up in another series, they went at 84 hours. So they went from 10 days to 8 hours, 8.4 hours, and they went from 8.4 to 84 hours. And in that image, you'll see about 20,000 galaxies through this little straw. And so they believe, they would tell you, there's probably as many galaxies out there as there are stars in our galaxy. If you were going to photograph the whole sky through a straw, how many pictures would you have to take? About 27 million pictures. Now, we got a problem, because today, all day, the sun is covering up a bazillion stars. There's no such word, but I kind of like that word anyway. And so we can't see all the stars, all the galaxies that would be in the sky during the day. But 6 months from now, the Earth is going to be over there on the other side of the sun. The sun will be behind us, and we'll be able to see the rest of the galaxies. And then we'd need to go to the southern hemisphere to cover the stuff we can't see. You know, people from the southern hemisphere can't see the Big Dipper and many of the constellations. You know, we can't see the Southern Cross and many things they see. So you'd have to take 27 million pictures to cover the whole sky if you were going to. And if each picture had 20,000 galaxies, how big is God? Yeah, my ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts. As high as the heavens are above the earth, are God's ways above our ways. So Norwitz said, we have 100 billion, 200 billion stars in the Milky Way, and we have 100, 200 billion other galaxies. He said the silent embarrassment to astrophysicists, they cannot tell you how even one star formed. We've got a graphic coming up of a galaxy face on, and if just to give you an idea of the size of the galaxy, you'll see at the top, you'll see an arrow at the top of the galaxy and an arrow at the bottom of the galaxy. And suppose you were to travel across the galaxy, and you got to the other side of the galaxy, you get your cell phone out, and you say, you know, I should call home and see how everything's doing back home. Okay, so you've traveled across the galaxy, you get to the other side of the galaxy, and you're going to make a phone call. Now, these radio waves are traveling 186,000 miles a second. It's going to take you at least 100,000 years to get the phone to ring. If your mama at the other end says hello, it would take you 200,000 years to hear the hello. That's the size of these galaxies, 200,000 years. Traveling at the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second, would take you 100 to 200,000 years to get a phone call across the galaxy. So that gives you some idea the size of the galaxy. I want to show you a couple other pictures of galaxies. The best illustration, if you want to show your kids, or take two paper Chinette paper plates, put them together, and you'll see there'll be like a circle in one way, and you'll see a thin line with a bulge. And our next graphic shows an edge-on galaxy, and you see the bulge in the center. Now, it's still going to take you 100,000, 200,000 years to get a phone call from the top to the bottom of that. But just as an example, we see galaxies from all different directions. And we have one more graphic coming up, and that one is very interesting. It's a real problem for evolution, because it seems that the arms are going both ways. The law of conservation of angular momentum, they should be spinning the same way. You see arms going in and going out, actually revolving in and out. And so that's a real problem for evolution. The next picture we have is a beautiful picture of Orion. This is a nebula. There are basically four type of nebulae in the sky. There are nebulae that glow because they're hot. There's nebulae that glow because they're embedded with hot stars. There's dark nebulae, which the horsehead you'll be seeing coming up in some of our programs, is just dust, interstellar dust. And then we have exploding stars, which we've talked about. The biggest stars seem to use up their fuel. And as they burn up their fuel, they tend to expand and get bigger and bigger, like a balloon. We pretty much know this happens. They get bigger and bigger till they can't, like a balloon, they pop, they explode, can't support this outer shell. And when this happens, we get this explosion. The gas is traveling out at hundreds of thousands, 200, 300, 400,000 miles, half a million miles an hour. This gas expands out in all directions. And some of these they've actually photographed. You can actually photograph this expanding gas over a period every 10, 15 years, and you can play it back on a computer and see and verify when it happened. It doesn't happen very often in the Milky Way galaxy. In fact, since the invention of the telescope in the last 400 years, we have not seen a supernova in the Milky Way galaxy. We did see one quite close to our galaxy, a little companion galaxy. In the south, we have the Magellanic Clouds. And in February 25, 1987, we had a star. Nobody noticed this star the night, but it was just like another star. And all of a sudden, it just went, supernova went bright, brightest thing in the whole galaxy. Some of these can actually be seen in the daytime. We've talked about that before, actually. Look at a scripture. What if you'd like to put that together with the God and the Creator in heaven? If you look at Hebrews 1, verse 3, it said, 1, verse 11, where it says, of old he laid the foundations of the earth and the heavens of the works of his hands. They will perish. The heavens are going to perish. Yea, all of them shall wax old like a garment. As a vesture shalt thou change them, and they shall be changed. Psalm 102, 25 and 26 repeats almost the same thing. And so some stars, this is my vesture. King James talks about a vesture. This is an outer jacket. And some stars repeatedly cast off an outer shell. Eta Carinae, for instance, does it about every 5.2 years. We see a blast come off. Some people found that scripture to be helpful. I want to share, talk a little bit about comets. And as an illustration, this would be kind of what a comet looks like. Now, a comet is the biggest thing and the smallest thing in the solar system. A comet, we have an ice cube, okay, just a chunk of ice. A comet, the nucleus, is just a chunk of ice. And it travels in our solar system, you know. And when it gets out, it will travel out past Jupiter, Saturn, maybe Uranus, Neptune. And then it begins falling towards the sun. And so it'll orbit the sun. And as it gets close to the sun, this ice cube vaporizes. So what could be five mile ice cube, okay? The nucleus could be a 5 mile ice cube in diameter. But when it gets close to the sun, as it comes in towards the sun, let's we'll say that this my computer is the sun. The heat from the sun, the solar wind, causes this ice to vaporize. This little 5 mile ice cube could become 100,000 mile. We call this now the coma. So the core is the nucleus, and that's the ice cube. But then the vapor cloud around it, we call this the nucleus. And the tail is formed by the solar wind. So as a comet comes in to go, and remember, the sun is my computer now. As it goes around the sun, the tail always points away from the sun. And what's really interesting, the comet leaves the sun running into its tail. Solar wind is causing this tail, and yet the comet is moving away, still causing the coma. And so as it travels out in space, it gets, smaller and smaller and smaller till when it gets out by Neptune, Uranus, then we can't even see it. Now, what's interesting, the comet leaves behind it, okay, particles. It's dust. It has a dusty tail in it. It has an ion tail and a vapor tail. And so behind the comet, it has this debris that's spread out. Now, this debris is mass. It's going to follow the same order. So as the comet has gone, it's going to leave a long tail of dust behind it. Now, it goes past Venus. It does a little dance. It goes past Jupiter. Does a little dance. So it tends to want to spread out. So in space, even though the comet may have already been around the sun, we still have this debris of particles behind it. Even though it may be way past the sun, we still have these particles from the comet tend to want to follow the comet orbit of the comet, follow the same orbit. Well, now we've got the Earth going around the sun. The Earth is going around the sun at 66,000 miles an hour. What happens if the Earth runs into these particles of dust? Well, you can rub your hands together tight and you get friction, they get hot. You see, at 66,000 miles an hour, these dust particles hit the upper atmosphere of our Earth and vaporize them. Now, we say we saw a falling star, a shooting star. If you remember from our previous programs, we show you our sun, the star, really big, and we showed you how little our Earth is. What would happen if a star fell on Earth? It would vaporize. The Earth would be gone. But when the Bible says the stars are going to fall from heaven, the Bible talks like we would look in the sky and see things. We say a shooting star, a falling star, because they look like stars, but actually particles of dust, because our Earth is traveling 66,000 miles an hour through space, it goes through areas, and we have these periodic comet meteor showers, like August, around the 12th of August, is the Perseid meteor shower. And the name comes from the constellation. The stars appear to be falling from the constellation of Perseus, and that's where we get the name. In November, we have the Leonids. They appear to come from the constellation of Leo. In December, we have the Geminis. And these were all the comets have gone. Almost every month, we have what we call periodic meteor showers because the Earth is going around where a comet has gone. Now, we had a pretty spectacular one in 1833. It was, in fact, we have, first of all, I need to show you a fantastic picture of Comet McNaught. Comet McNaught it's been three or four years ago. Most fantastic comet I've ever seen. It was actually visible in the daytime. I went up to the top of our building right at sunset, and you could actually see this comet in the daytime. And so, but you see the particles behind it that it leaves behind this comet McNaught. And you can imagine the particles there. If the Earth were to travel through there at 66,000 miles an hour, what would happen? Well, in 1833, we had the meteor shower, we're called the Leonids, around the middle of November. And you can still go out and see particles left over from that shower. But it turns out Comet Temple-Tuttle was responsible for that meteor shower. Comet Temple-Tuttle is a 33-year comet, so every 33 years it goes around. And that was 1833, and even down in 1966, 1999, it's continuing to go around, but it still has this whole path of debris that it leaves or has left behind it. And so if you go out about the middle of November, 15th, 16th of November, you can see the remnant of that. And the next event would be in 2033. And it'll be on the news. In 1999, it was on the news like crazy. In fact, they were saying they really had plotted this comet very well. And they were able to predict that the best views of this meteor shower of 1999 would be in the Orient. And I went on Travelocity and made a bid, you could bid on airline tickets, to go to Hawaii so I could see the meteor shower. Well, I didn't get the offer, so I didn't get to go, but they were correct. It was actually the most spectacular in the Orient. Well, there's one more graphic coming up, and that shows you, they didn't have good cameras in 1833, but it shows you an artist's conception of what the stars, the falling stars of 1833. And this, of course, created a great interest in the second coming of Christ because people saw it as a sign, that the time of the end, that the stars were falling, as the Bible talks about the end of time. The sun will be dark, the moon turn to blood and not give her light, and the stars will fall from heaven. And so this was a great, exciting event of 1833. Now, the stars were falling at the rate of, actually, they figured about 100,000 an hour. It seemed like 100,000 an hour. They were coming straight down from Leo in November. Leo is straight overhead. And we had the, I watched the one in 1999, and these are fireballs. They are very bright. In fact, they actually, some of them created shadows on the ground of the pine trees where I live in the mountains. And so it was a pretty spectacular event, the most spectacular one I've seen. But they're coming straight down out of Leo in November because Leo is straight overhead. And so people thought this was really a sign of the time of the end. One farmer went out and said that he was going to see if there were any stars left because he was sure that all the stars fell the night before. Well, the Bible tells us that because he's strong in power, not one faileth. And once again, and you'll be seeing in this series, I guess, the last week's program, we showed you the size of our sun. We showed you the size of, you know, Arcturus and Betelgeuse and Canis Majoris, these huge, huge stars. And when we put these stars on the screen, these big, huge stars, you can't even see the size of the Earth. You couldn't even put a pin on the screen and show you the size of the Earth. And so when we say a star fell, a star did not fall. It was a meteor shower caused by friction as our Earth is traveling 66,000 miles an hour around the sun. And they're little particles of dust that create, that burn up. They actually burn up in the upper atmosphere as we are orbiting about the sun. So our time goes by so fast, and we want to thank you for watching Heavens Declare, and just remind you that if you don't know the Lord, you can find Him. You can seek Him and find Him. The Bible tells us that you can seek Him and find Him if you search for Him with all your heart. We live in a troublesome world, troublesome times. Every day I think the world can't get any worse. It seems like every day it does get worse. And the Bible tells us that there are signs at the end of famines and pestilence and earthquakes. And so the day is coming when Jesus is coming. You want to be ready for that. And so thank you again for watching our Heavens Declare.